Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 21st, 2015. South Sudan has set aside $10 million for the celebration of the country's fourth independent anniversary.
It's not only about the access to items, but it's also about having the money to be able to buy those things in the markets.
And Oxfam says majority of families in South Sudan cannot afford to put food on the table due to the country's economic crisis. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. International aid group Oxfam is adding its voice to the growing number of aid agencies and individuals warning that the soaring cost of living in South Sudan is hitting people hard. Oxfam says high prices for basic goods are having a particular tough impact on families in areas affected by the 16-month-old conflict in South Sudan. Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
In a statement published today, Oxfam says, quote, "Skyrocketing inflation, conflict and collapsed markets are pushing people in South Sudan to breaking point as families face a second lean season since fighting began." Emma Jane Drew is Oxfam's humanitarian program manager in South Sudan. She says the soaring prices are adding to the burden that South Sudanese families carry every day.
In the rural areas where I have been visiting, it's not only about the access to items, but it's also about having the money to be able to buy those things in the markets. So people who previously had an income or have been displaced and lost many things don't have the same level of capital anymore to be able to access the basic essentials that they need to be able to support the household.
Drew says prices have risen drastically in areas affected by 16 months of conflict in South Sudan. Unity, Upper Nile and Jonglei states have borne the brunt of the fighting that broke out 16 months ago. One reason prices have been rising is because the South Sudanese pound has been losing value against the US dollar. Most of the food consumed in South Sudan is imported and paid for in dollars. While the official rate remains at 3.16 pounds to the US dollar, the black market rate is as high as 9 pounds to 1 US dollar and appears to be still rising. Drew says this high exchange rate is increasing the cost of regional food imports and putting pressure on already stretched household budgets, and not only in areas affected by the conflict.
We're certainly starting to experience that even in places like Juba. A piece of bread that was 2 pieces for £1 is now 1 piece for £1. So even a soda that was £5 is now £6. So we are starting to see some of these increases. And, I mean, for those of us that have a steady income, we can absorb some of these things. But for families who don't have regular incomes or have lost their livelihoods, that £1 or that one piece of bread actually is a very big problem for them.
According to the United Nations, 2.5 million South Sudanese are already facing severe levels of hunger. And by June, more than 1 million other people will become food insecure, according to the USAID-funded Famine Early Warning Systems Network, or FUSENET. FUSENET predicts that from March to June this year, the poor and the IDPs in the 3 states most affected by the fighting will have even more trouble getting enough to eat as the so-called lean season sets in. The lean season is the time between harvests when many people have exhausted all of their food supplies. FUSENET also predicts that in countries where insecurity makes it difficult for humanitarian agencies to get help to people in need, many households will face emergency levels of food insecurity as early as next month. Drew says another problem is that most markets in conflict-affected areas were either destroyed during fighting or were closed down when people fled those areas.
There has definitely been a great deal of disruption to the markets, whether it's logistical, whether it's economic, whether it's conflict related. But the accumulation of all of them combined is definitely having an impact.
Drew says that to help South Sudan pull itself out of this crisis, donors must support programs that develop people's skills and resilience. But she says, above all, the country's leaders must end the conflict and ensure lasting peace, security and stability in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
Senior members of Riek Machar's SPLM in opposition group are visiting Omaha, Nebraska in the United States to raise awareness about the dire humanitarian situation in South Sudan. The chairman for humanitarian affairs in rebel-controlled areas says aid agencies are facing huge challenges as they try to assist families who are trapped in remote villages in Unity, Upper Nile, and Jungle Estates. Hussein Marnyot says Juba is blocking aid agencies from bringing assistance to families living in areas under rebel control.
The UN agencies, the NGOs that are working there are trying their best. Sometimes they meet a lot of obstructions from the government, issues to do with the clearance of their operations to the areas before they take off from Juba. And sometimes also the humanitarian workers who are actually from the neighboring communities or particularly from Great Upper Nile are being targeted sometimes by the security.
Vincent Lilley is the head of the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Assistance, or OCHA, in South Sudan. He says the UN is providing assistance to people in need in both government and rebel-held areas.
Every day of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, there are planes leaving to several destinations in the government-held areas and in the opposition-held areas in equal measure to provide assistance without any discrimination by both parties. We only have occasional challenges if we find ourselves in the midst of ongoing violence, but humanitarians are not necessarily directly targeted.
Marnyot says the country is facing serious food shortages. He says 16 months of fighting have prevented farmers from growing crops. Marnyot says poor relations between Sudan and South Sudan have worsened this situation by reducing the amount of essential goods that are imported from Sudan.
The humanitarian situation in South Sudan is really bad, a lot of suffering, and this is particularly in the areas under the control of the SPLM-SPLA in opposition.
Sophia Guy is a former member of parliament of South Sudan's National Assembly. She's appealing to the American people and the South Sudanese diaspora to contribute money towards humanitarian work in South Sudan.
Those who are really suffering are women and children who need medicine, who need food, who need shelter, who need everything. So any assistance that will be given, it will target the women, the children, and the elderly, and those who are vulnerable at this war that is imposed on people of South Sudan.
SPLM in opposition executive director for humanitarian affairs based in Omaha says his office will continue to appeal to the South Sudanese diaspora for funds to help people who are suffering in South Sudan. William Pei says it is not just the international community that should step up to help South Sudan in these times of crisis.
South Sudanese need to be mobilized and be told and be made aware of the current situation that has engulfed nearly half of the country, and also the suffering of the people. People need to be educated, and also how to get involved in alleviating the situation of the humanitarian crisis.
The UN estimates that 2 million people have been forced to flee their homes, and 4 million are facing hunger because of the fighting in South Sudan. Yesterday, President Kiir said in a speech to Open Parliament that his government has purchased 1,000 tractors to help fight the looming food crisis in the country. Mr. Kiir's critics have questioned the wisdom of the purchase and whether the funds could have been better spent. Meanwhile, in spite of the warning about South Sudan's flowering economy, President Kiir's government has approved a budget of 33 million South Sudanese pounds to pay for events to mark the fourth anniversary of independence in July. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Information Minister Michael Makwei says higher prices for commodities are behind the higher budget for this year's Independence Day celebrations. Makwe says the £33 million budget for this year's independence anniversary is £10 million more than what was spent last year. He says the government is already getting ready for the celebrations on July 9th.
The celebration technical committee is already set up, and as usual, it is under the Secretary General of the government and plus representative from the various ministries. This committee has already started its work, and it was set up by His Excellency the President, and it is now working.
South Sudan gained independence from Sudan in 2011 after more than two decades of civil war. But 2 years later, the world's newest nation erupted in a new conflict. The conflict is still ongoing and is hitting the country's economy hard. Makwe says just because the country is mired in conflict does not mean that it should not celebrate.
Otherwise, if you are a South Sudanese, irrespective of whether you are a rebel or you are with the government, this is where we are supposed to celebrate, because it is this independence which we have been fighting for.
Kenyi Spencer is a South Sudanese economist and chairperson of the Central Equatorial State Secretariat Vision 2040, a committee that aims to bring tangible economic improvements to Central Equatorial State by the year 2040. Kenyi says South Sudan can and should celebrate its independence anniversary just as any other country in the world would. But he disagrees with the amount the government has allocated for Independence Day parties.
The amount which is attached to the price tag is rather too high, especially considering the conditions that the country is in. I would have preferred if, say, maybe we used a third of that for the celebration. That would have made a bit of sense. But using all $33 million for celebration alone, and yet there are so many other things hanging.
Kenyi says the government should give priority to bringing skyrocketing prices under control. He says Independence Day celebrations
shouldn't be at the expense of many other things, especially issues of affording to import fuel and foods and medicines and many other things that are necessary for running the system in the country. It's rather steep to make it really too expensive like that. But a simple affair, it would have been, it's just a matter of signifying that we're celebrating the day. Raising of the flag is the most important thing. It's not the expenditure that really matters.
Juba resident Wani Michael says the government should reconsider how much it plans to spend on the July 9th celebrations. He agrees with Kenyi that an expensive party should not be high on the government's list of priorities.
The economy is not building up. The viability of our economy is crippling every day and night. There is scarcity of dollars because there is no flow of oil. We do not have enough foreign currencies in the country. That is why the dollar is hitting the black market 900 or 800, almost hitting to 1,000.
At the official exchange rate, the 33 million South Sudanese pounds that the government has budgeted for the celebrations is the equivalent to around 10 million US dollars. That is around $1 for every South Sudanese, many of whom have been living on less than that a day since the latest conflict erupted in December 2013. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at malnutrition in South Sudan. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could speak any language, what would it be?
The language that I want to learn is French. And the reason why is French now is the second language that a lot of people are learning.
I would go for English, because English is much popular. In such a way, I can find it easy for me to communicate with the people across the world.
Like one of these languages, it is Arabic. People speak it at the level of international. So it would be good for me to speak the language if I would be able to speak it. Then the other second language is that should be my local language. I've seen it. So it would be good if I could speak it, and if some other people also who are not new could speak it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our health segment. More and more officials are warning that malnutrition is on the rise in South Sudan, and not just in areas that have been hit hard by 16 months of fighting. Waki Simon Wudu visited clinics for malnourished adults and children in an IDP camp in Unity State and at a hospital in Juba, where officials are scrambling to find long-term solution to the problem of hunger in South Sudan.
Panyijar County in southern Unity State has been hard hit by the 16-month-old conflict in South Sudan. Thousands of internally displaced persons or IDPs have come to the county to seek shelter from fighting. Many of them are children aged 5 and younger. They are particularly vulnerable to severe malnutrition and its long-lasting impacts. Panyijar County is controlled by rebel forces loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. The nearly 100,000 people, including IDPs living here, survive on basic commodities supplied by aid agencies. Darlene Raphael is the World Food Program Head of Nutrition in South Sudan. She says a survey conducted by aid partners found that 32% of children in Panyijar suffer from moderate to severe acute malnutrition. The WFP is the sole source of food for most people in Panyijar. The UN agency distributes 4 kilograms of food items per person each month in the county. A hungry young child cries at Ganiel Nutrition Center. The center is one of very few medical facilities in the county. It is run by the International Rescue Committee, or IRC, in partnership with UNICEF and WFP. At the clinic, children receive treatment for malnutrition, and their parents and guardians are instructed on the importance of proper nutrition. Musa Sakwon is a counselor at the center. He manages the infant and young child feeding program. Sakwon says nursing mothers come to the center twice a week for sessions on how to properly breastfeed their babies. Sakwon says at least 5 lactating mothers are admitted daily to Ganiel Nutrition Center. Too often, their children are suffering from acute malnutrition. Sakwon says the center is making efforts to raise awareness among lactating mothers on how to best to nourish their children. Sakwon says counselors are also trying to eliminate traditional practices that they say contribute to the rising cases of malnutrition in the county. For example, he says many mothers are unaware that they can breastfeed their newborn infants.
When the mother gives birth, immediately the child will be given a cow meal soon after birth. Another one, they have ideology that when the child is come out, they have to wait for the placenta to come out first.
In South Sudan, the problem of malnutrition does not just occur in rural, conflict-stricken areas like Panyijar County. Al-Sabah Children's Hospital in Juba is one of the many pediatric health care centers in all of South Sudan. The hospital has started an intensive nutrition care program because even in the nation's capital, malnutrition is on the rise. Wani Moses is a nutritionist working at Al-Sabah. He says an average of 80 patients suffering either from moderate or acute malnutrition are admitted to the hospital every month.
The major causes, we can say, food insecurity. All these mothers, to say, who are actually taking care of these children, they don't have adequate food at their own home. So you find most of these mothers, their husbands are either soldiers, taken away for work, duties.
Moses says education on maintaining proper hygiene, family planning information, and awareness of child nutrition must be provided to parents and caregivers. Zeno Muhanga, the head of nutrition for the IRC, agrees that merely helping people who are already suffering from malnutrition is not enough.
There is more need of having other programs to scale up, like agriculture and the food security and the livelihood program. This needs to scale up in order to have the long-term solution for the malnutrition cases in our location. Because the programs which we are running, these are the short-term. They are not actually meant for the long-term solution.
For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Torit. Officials from Eastern Equatoria States have banned night gathering in Torit town after a deadly grenade attack on a disco hall over the weekend. Jacob Achek has this report for VOA from Juba.
On Saturday at around 2 a.m., a hand grenade exploded in a disco in Hayametara, a village near Torit Airport. Two young women were killed instantly and many more patrons were wounded. Eastern Equatoria State Information Minister Mark Akio says dozens of people were admitted to Torit Hospital after the attack. The United Nations mission in South Sudan flew six people with serious injuries to Juba for medical attention.
Unfortunately, four others died later in Torit Hospital, and one died yesterday, bringing now a total of death cases to seven.
Torit Mayor Martin Odeki Horo says he has banned nighttime gathering to prevent further killing and instability in the town.
In regards to the security of the town, I, as the mayor of the town, has imposed a provisional order banning all sort of discos and all sort of big gatherings until we see when the situation becomes a bit normal. So all discos are all banned.
Odeki says anyone who disobeyed the order will be arrested and taken to courts. Odeki says most of the victims of the attacks are young, in their late teens or earlier 20s.
We have advised the parents of the youth not to allow children to move unnecessarily and going to disco places without any intention, really, without anything. And they have to be very, very careful because, of course, right now, you know, the Torit has been very secured, but we don't know who are these bloodthirsty people who are trying to bring instability in Torit.
Minister Akio says the Eastern Equatoria government is appealing for calm in Torit town. He says security forces are trying their best to hunt down and arrest the perpetrators of the attack. He blamed the attacks on the ease of getting weapons in South Sudan. For BOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
We have a confirmed report that another person has died of injuries they sustained in the attack, bringing the death toll to 8. China has sent more peacekeeping troops to South Sudan to beef up the hundreds of Chinese soldiers who are already in the country. Shannon Van Staan reports on China's growing military presence in the region.
Authorities say 130 Chinese soldiers have traveled to South Sudan to join 570 Chinese peacekeepers that were dispatched to the region over the last 3 months. They are seeking to defuse a civil war that has killed more than 10,000 people in South Sudan and driven more than a million from their homes. Rights groups have accused the government, opposition forces, and other groups of serious human rights abuses in the conflict. Chinese state media say that the deployment affirms China's growing global role in contributing troops to peacekeeping forces. Daniel Wagner is a CEO of Country Risk Solutions.
Well, like any country, China is both interested in protecting its interests as well as projecting its power. And that's what's going on in Sudan right now.
For 2 decades after China joined the United Nations in 1971, it refused to contribute troops or money to peacekeeping operations, reflecting Beijing's policy of non-interference. But starting in the early 1990s, the country began joining UN missions and in recent years has dramatically increased the number of personnel it sends overseas. The deployment to South Sudan marks the first time China is sending an infantry battalion on a peacekeeping mission. Chinese state media have reported that contrary to previous Chinese peacekeeping missions where soldiers played supportive roles, this infantry battalion has combat capabilities. Yuan Xuan, a fellow at the Brookings Institute, says protecting China's massive oil investment in the country may be one reason for the increase of troops in the region. In 2011, 5% of China's oil came from South Sudan, and some of the worst violence has been in the oil-producing states of Unity and Upper Nile.
I understand from the Chinese perspective, they would like to argue that we're contributing more people, we're contributing combat troops. So based on that simple fact, yes, China is making a bigger contribution to global peacekeeping operations. But on the other hand, when you look at the story behind, you realize that, oh, by the way, China also has significant oil interests on the ground. So China's motivation may not be that altruistic to begin with.
Chinese state media have heralded the soldiers' deployment to South Sudan as proof of the country's new role as a responsible international stakeholder. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Hong Kong.
Meanwhile, China's Export-Import Bank, or EXIM, has not released any of the $700 million that Beijing pledged to President Kiir's government to build a road from Juba to Rumbek. As a result, the ambitious project has been put on hold, as Philip Thorner Liu reports from Juba.
National Transportation Minister Quang Daniel Galuak says China's Exim Bank told South Sudanese officials that the delay in releasing the funds was due to management changes at the bank. The reshuffle at the top of Exim meant that Chinese constructors working on the road have not yet been paid.
It caused a delay because they did not get the money on time. That's why they are now going to China. They went to Beijing, to be specific, to apply for the first installment. They were using their own money for the last 4 years, not only for this road, but for rehabilitation of the road itself, the junction from Yerul to Aluagluag to Rumbek, very notorious for the last 4 years.
But Galuak says he is confident that construction of the road will go ahead. He said that the 500-kilometer road could even be completed on schedule by June 2017.
Our plan is in place. We are going to meet the deadline. As long as the money is available to the contractor, they will do the job as they have already started. All the machinery are on the road.
Galuak says developing South Sudan's road network is at the top of the list of the country's development projects.
All of us who agree now, we should give priority to roads even if we don't build. Because if we don't build roads, you will not build schools, hospitals, even the agriculture we're talking about. You will not bring food to the market, even to the other areas of needs.
Galuak says he is confident China will release the funds for the road. He also assured Exim Bank that the loan will be paid back. But he declined to say when that might be or how much interest is attached to the multi-million dollar loan. But Galuak says South Sudanese need to be patient with the government and its development projects. He says it can cost up to $1.5 million to pave 1 kilometer of road in South Sudan. He says some South Sudanese have unrealistic expectations of the government.
They think the road will pave themselves alone. Even the building will grow like trees. It's not like that. Roads is a very expensive business.
Galuak says he is hopeful the Chinese will continue funding his ministry's 10-year plan to connect major towns to the nation capital by road. Galuak says that when President Kiir visited Beijing in 2012, he was promised a loan worth $8 billion that will cover development projects in the country. South Sudan has only around 300 kilometers of paved roads. A third of those are in the capital, Juba, and there is a 192-kilometer tarmac linking Juba to Numili on the Ugandan border. For BOA News, I am Philip Tona Leo in Juba. Malaika, Malaika.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Malaika by Freedom Boys.
Oh,
We have been listening to Freedom Voice with the song Malaika. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your cars and homes. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.